If you're anything like me, you may find that you end the year with plenty of continuing education credits, but assembling them all for your recertification or relicensing or reboarding is just the biggest pain. You gotta find a credit here, half a credit here, get all the documents together, there's a million tiny quizzes and what have you. So if you find that you could use some extra, whether you don't have it or you just don't want to try to deal with it, you should check out the Intensive Care Academy. That's our other educational platform at ICU101.com, where there is tons of content on different critical care topics in video form for subscribers and even a couple more podcast feeds. But we just recently expanded our continuing education accreditation for additional hours. Plenty of hours for you and very easy to claim, all in one lump at the end of the year, every year. Great way to go about it and quite affordable. Check it out, guys. ICU101.com. On to the show. Hey everyone, I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Brian Bowling with you, and joining me, as always, is Brandon Odo.
Hello.
So we thought we'd talk about something today that we do a lot of in the ICU, and maybe there's not necessarily consensus on how to do it best, and that's setting PEEP on the ventilator. So maybe you're like me, and you just pick a number at random arbitrarily and titrate to effect. That's how I do a lot of my critical care, honestly.
I use the golden ratio.
Yeah. Maybe you have fancy calculators or use mystical numbers that were inscribed on a hatch in a mysterious island somewhere.
However,
you do it, there's probably a right way and a wrong way, or at least a wrong way. Maybe there's not a right way. But we're gonna talk a little bit about one way to do it. And so we decided we would get some help here, and so we invited Olivia Saragano to come and join us. And she's an intensivist, an EM intensivist by training, way up north at the University of Vermont. Go maple syrup, guys. I don't know what you guys, I don't know what your thing is.
Yeah,
up there.
Yeah, something like that.
She covers the CVICU, the SICU, the ER, all sorts of things. And recently did a study on seeing if there's a way that we can kind of get a better idea of how to set PEEP besides just picking numbers at random. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
So, Olivia, we're just kind of going to generally discuss this topic. And we were just talking before we started recording. I feel like I just talked about this, but it was not on this show. I talked about PEEP at length with Jed Wolpa over on ACRAC. So if anyone listens to them, you can check that as well. But this is specifically going to be kind of a look at setting PEEP, and really specifically in the case of obese patients. And I'm just going to try to summarize the backstory here. So you tell me if I'm mischaracterizing this, but
sure.
There was a prior study looking at whether we can effectively estimate the best PEEP for obese patients by taking their BMI and dividing it by the number 3. And it suggested that gets you pretty close in a lot of cases. And then you guys have kind of looked at using that method as well as one or two others and came up with some of your own data to kind of better flesh out the topic. Is that a fair description?
So what is optimal PEEP? I guess we can maybe start there. And this was kind of the foundation of some of this work. I have to immediately, of course, shout out the collaborators that I worked with, Dr. Skylar Lentz and Dr. Gabe Tharp. Gabe is an anesthesiologist here at the University of Vermont, and he's been collecting this data set in patients that are in the OR. So a little bit different than the ICU, and we can talk about the caveats of that, but to try and see, especially in patients with obesity, how can we measure and optimize PEEP to overcome, you know, the central adiposity and equalize people's pleural pressures so that we can ventilate them most effectively. We use esophageal manometry, placing an esophageal balloon in the OR and trying to titrate to a transpleural pressure of 0. So the esophageal balloon should be a surrogate measure of the intrapleural pressure, but outside of the lungs. That should account for the chest wall, the body habitus, external forces on the lungs that we need to overcome. And in different people with different body shape and size, that number is going to be different. We looked at a couple of things. We looked at BMI divided by 3 and setting just a PEEP of 10, and then how far off was using esophageal manometry to get those numbers.
So let me just try to unpack the backstory here, because I bet 92% of the audience has never seen an esophageal balloon, even though if you read the ventilator literature, you'd think they're like around every corner. Brian, have you ever even seen one of these?
No. I mean, other than like to stop esophageal bleeding. But not for the purposes of what we're talking about.
Of Blakemore. Yeah.
So different balloon.
These are, you know, floppy little balloons. I guess you could think of it like a Foley or something. You stick it into the esophagus, kind of like an OG tube, and then you transduce the pressure applied to the balloon tip there. The idea being that the esophagus is a floppy structure which has little pressure of its own, and it mostly transmits the pressure from the pleural space. And if you remember your respiratory physiology, a normal pleural pressure is close to zero, slightly negative maybe. And if you're very obese, very large, a very heavy chest wall and abdomen, you start to see maybe very positive pressures because of all the weight on your chest. It's like somebody loaded a barbell on top of you. And this might be a useful number to know if you want to set your PEEP correctly, because it should intuit that if the esophageal pressure and therefore the pleural pressure is 25 centimeters of water positive, and you set a PEEP of 5 centimeters of water, you have 5 inside the alveolus and you have 25 outside compressing the alveolus, that alveolus is probably going to collapse. And that's how we see the atelectasis associated with higher BMIs in obese patients. And so measuring this number might give you a target to titrate your PEEP. And so in that case, if that pleural pressure, your esophageal pressure, was 25, maybe the right PEEP is about 25. And people describe this as a transpleural or transpulmonary pressure or gradient, meaning just subtracting those two. What's the difference of pretty close to zero, maybe a slightly positive gradient from the PEEP side. And that should be the number to kind of neutralize the effect of the body habitus. Is that a good description?
Much better than mine, yes. That's exactly right. How can we account for pressures coming from exogenously outside of the lungs, but still influencing the pressure within the thorax, and making sure that the pressure that we're delivering from inside of the lungs can overcome the pressure that is trying to collapse those lungs, and seeing how else can we come up with this number? Because to your point, esophageal balloons are not floating around every place all the time. It's not something that everyone has access to. In fact, most don't have access to.
The first question I can hear coming back from this, the pushback I hear is, that's a lot of PEEP. So yeah, I get you got this extrinsic pressure on the lungs, but does that translate into safe for the inside of the lung, right? If I'm giving you 25 centimeters of water a PEEP inside the lung, even though, yeah, you got 25 centimeters of water pressure pushing down on the lung, is that still safe for the tissue in the lung, or am I going to cause barotrauma?
The analogy people will use is that you don't injure lungs, whether you want to call it barotrauma or something else, by putting pressure in them. You injure lungs by creating a high gradient of pressure, meaning a lot inside compared to outside. If you put in 100 centimeters of water pressure, but you have 100 outside too, well, I mean, you're sort of just sandwiching the wall. I think this intuitively makes sense. Where is the injury going to happen if you're balanced on both sides? I mean, I guess you compress the alveolar wall, but there's not like a rupturing force there. And you see that physiologically a lot. People who bear down have like a strong Valsalva, go into the bathroom, they're squatting a heavy weight or playing the trumpet or something like that. People don't injure their lungs normally doing that because you have very high pressures in the lungs, but also in the pleural space. So that presumably is what we would see here. If there's a very high pressure in the pleura, but an equal pressure in the alveoli, probably there's no injury. That's sort of what people believe, and I guess what I believe. It makes sense.
Well, that does make sense, but that sort of brings up my next question that I was going to get to a second ago, which is, you know, your description just there of people playing the trumpet, people doing a heavy squat, bearing down, those are all like short-term increases in pressure. And when you're talking about a patient in the operating room, you're also talking about a relatively short term. You know, we do that in the ICU. We turn, I might turn a PEEP up to 25 for a minute to recruit, but then I'm turning it back down. So I guess, you know, looking at this in the operating room where you're under, you're getting this for an hour, a couple hours, whatever, versus somebody who's in the ICU maybe for days, is there a difference in the duration of this high PEEP?
If it is purely the pressure that is needed to overcome a force that is always there, that pressure should not really be injurious to that lung.
And, you know, I made up that example at 25, but when people measure these things in very obese patients, you can end up on PEEPs like that, 25, 30, numbers that really you would probably never go to without that measurement because it's so outside of what we would consider more routine care. And I guess that brings up a question we should ask, which is that you're using as your gold standard esophageal manometry and PEEP for PEEP titration. Do we have reason to think that is correct? I mean, the physiology makes sense we've described, but was there prior work showing that, let's say, doing so improves outcomes or reduces lung injury or something like that, or it just makes a lot of sense?
It makes a lot of sense. When this has been looked at in ICU patients and to see if this improves outcomes or has a, you know, an effect of mortality. The biggest trial is probably the EpiVent 2 trial, which I think was in 2019 or so, comparing a strategy like this using esophageal manometry versus kind of a standard high PEEP FiO2 table a la ARMA or an ARDSnet type of protocol and individualizing PEEP to patients based on their esophageal manometry measurements in that study did not result in a, you know, statistically significant mortality difference. But does it mean that it kind of stands to reason logically that that trying to just figure out what is the floor that I need to open all my alveoli and overcome this pressure, that is, it's a logically sound kind of starting point. But I hear you on you know, the gold standard is a little nebulous maybe.
Well, so the next question that comes to mind is, so you're talking about, like, let's say you do your BMI divided by 3. What is that analogous to in a sort of person with a normal BMI? Is that 5? So if you're getting 25, is that 5? So if I have a patient who normally would need 10 of PEEP, do I have to go up from 25 or should 25 be sufficient?
Well, Brian, you know, you'd have to divide by 3. So
do you see what I'm saying?
5 times 3 would be a BMI of 15. That's a pretty small person, though, at least in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's a small person, no doubt.
You're saying my 5 is probably not enough.
Or does this model fail at low or maybe higher range?
Right. Yeah.
Should we?
Yeah. So this data set included patients across the spectrum of BMI, including kind of low to normal BMI. It wasn't purely in obese patients. And even there, BMI divided by 3 very closely matched the mean measured optimal PEEP. However, the ranges that the measurements spanned were much greater. So though the means across each BMI category were quite close using BMI divided by 3 and comparing that to a PEEP required to achieve a transpleural pressure of 0, the range that within any one BMI category was not super closely captured. And that BMI divided by 3 nailed about 37% of patients. So just north of a third of your patients are going to be super well served with BMI divided by 3. And that's probably a good starting place. But true individualization of PEEP based on transpleural pressure, you're still probably missing optimal in two-thirds of patients.
So we got up maybe a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but why don't you just give us in a couple sentences, if you can summarize what you guys did.
BMI divided by 3 has been studied by other authors with suggestion that it probably somewhat closely approximates a transpleural pressure of 0. And so what our group did was took a group of just over 100 patients with a range of BMIs from less than 25 up to greater than 40, and looked at them based on BMI range. Then looked at what PEEP was necessary to achieve a transpleural pressure of zero plus or minus two via esophageal manometry, and then compared that to a more simple calculation. Let's say we just set the PEEP at 10. How many of those patients are we going to capture their optimal PEEP based on a transpleural pressure of zero? Then let's say we set a PEEP to a BMI divided by three. How many of those patients are we going to capture in the same way? And then just stack those up against each other. How do these compare in terms of achieving an optimal PEEP? PEEP of 10 flat across the board did not perform great. It correlated with optimal PEEP in just around a quarter of patients. So 75% of patients, you're either under PEEPing or over PEEPing.
Sorry, how close did you have to be to perfect to be considered good? What was your?
Within about five. So plus or minus a transpleural pressure of minus two to plus two, we're calling that okay.
Okay.
So pretty close to that zero. You know, there's risks to over-peeping people, but in the obese population, I think under-peeping is probably our bigger worry and something that comes up more often. And certainly that's kind of what our data found.
Well, and to Brian's point too, I mean, you didn't just include obese patients. So if you're thinking of that group, giving everyone a PEEP of 10 probably will be too much in some, if you're in that, you know, everyone starts on a PEEP of 5 kind of mindset. It's a very, very blunt tool in that case. If you isolated it to just bigger patients, maybe that would have performed a little better, right?
Yeah, I think it's certainly closer. And yeah, it is quite a blunt tool. So in patients with, you know, BMI less than 30, in the, you know, less than 25 group, and in the 25 to 29.9 group, that PEEP of 10 largely overshot. But across each BMI category, BMI divided by 3 was quite close to the mean pressure of the measured individualized PEEPs. It's really the range that becomes harder to predict. So one patient, even in a patient with, you know, healthy lungs in the OR in optimal conditions without obstructive lung disease, which is a lot of caveats to translate this to the ICU. But even in those patients, a BMI divided by 3 it's going to approximate the mean within their BMI category, but two patients with a BMI of 35 may still have quite different optimal PEEPs to achieve a transpleural pressure of zero. And using esophageal manometry resulted in a wider range, though the means were essentially the same across all categories.
So it didn't do better or worse in bigger or smaller patients. It was in the ballpark for the biggest and the smallest patients, but within any of those groups, you know, was not perfect. You said it was about a third of them nailed it in every in every group.
Yeah.
Which I know may not sound good, but I mean, at least it's a tool that is consistently in your ballpark for every patient, which is, I would imagine, most other tools, like giving everyone the same PEEP, or a lot of other kind of flat instruments will do much better at only with certain patients, right?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And kind of applying it to, you know, cases I've seen. Tell me if this sounds like something that's familiar to you. I have a case that stands out to me from when I was in fellowship. We had a young guy. He was in his late 20s who got intubated for hypoxic hypercapnic respiratory failure that was basically due to obesity hypoventilation. He just was, his BMI was 50 plus, and he was, you know, headed toward a trach because there was this inability to liberate him from the ventilator because we couldn't get him down to a magical PEEP of pick your cutoff, 5 to extubate, 8 to extubate, 10 to extubate, something along those lines. But we were totally under supporting him in what probably he needed physiologically. You're thinking about a PEEP in the, you know, 16-18 range for that degree of obesity to just overcome the chest wall. And so trying to get down to that low of a PEEP because it's something that we're comfortable with, something that we're used to, something that is part of our typical practice, it's not going to serve every patient. And when you're dealing with, the obese population is, we might just need to kind of change our framework about how we think about what they physiologically need and how to get there.
So the elevator summary here is that with obese patients, I mean, perhaps with any patient, but looking at the obese patient, if you give everyone a baseline PEEP of BMI divided by 3, you will get you'll get it right about a third of the time for everyone in the sort of ballpark for the majority. If you give everyone a PEEP of 10, you'll get it right about a third of the time, but that's really only probably going to be in a certain BMI range where that was the right PEEP. For smaller patients, it's probably too much, and bigger patients, it's probably too little, which is probably what anyone would guess. And then if you just give everyone a PEEP of 5 or something, I mean, that would apply to any constant PEEP, right? It's going to be right for some number and too much or too few. So depending on what your average patient size is, you could pick a different, but it's never going to be quite right. And I guess if you use the esophageal balloon, then by this standard, you'll get it right all the time because that was a gold standard. But right. If you don't have one, that's not okay. I guess one question that we should highlight is this is looking at the OR patient who in the vast majority of cases have, quote, normal lungs, baseline lungs. They may have some chronic disease, but they're there for some probably elective procedure. They wouldn't be operating otherwise. So really what we're looking at is just managing the body habitus and trying to neutralize the atelectasis associated with that. The patient in the ICU who is on the ventilator for CHF or ARDS or pneumonia, and you think of using PEEP to try to recruit that consolidated shunted lung, this is not looking at any of that. This is trying to reverse this baseline atelectasis in a big patient. And so how would we then think about the role of PEEP for actual lung disease? Would you take the obese patient, determine their PEEP in one of these ways, and then add some more PEEP targeted to whatever you think their physiology is? And how you titrate that might be a topic for a whole another day, but and then treat this as just sort of their baseline, like you would never go below this number. Then my next question will be, would you wean to this number and extubate everyone on this number? But do you see this as sort of separate from the question of PEEP for lung disease?
I do, yeah, and I think that's a really great point and important to highlight kind of in the limitations of what we looked at here. But I think it's trying to establish what is the floor. To the point that you just made, if I think that I want to try and extubate someone, why, knowing that, you know, if I had an esophageal balloon in someone and I know that they need a PEEP of 12 to maintain a transpulmonary pressure of 0, and that PEEP of 12 is just what is overcoming their physiology, and it's that physiology is not going to change. They're always going to need at least that much. And then to recruit diseased lung on top of that, you expect that they would need more. To the point about extubating, I think that's one of the really useful places that this comes in, is trying to wean people substantially below this PEEP might be a fool's errand. You might just result in tons of atelectasis, all in the name of trying to achieve this magical number that we picked, but that's not necessarily individualized to the patient in front of you. So yes, I think that in order to recruit diseased lung, in order to optimize that ARDS patient, that pneumonia patient, this now gives me a framework to say, okay, if I think that their BMI divided by 3 is where I need to start, just to, if their lungs were perfectly healthy, undiseased, just to get them to baseline, and then I want to recruit from there, I might feel more comfortable in these higher PEEP ranges, in the high teens, approaching 20, you know, depending on what the physiology is, who the patient is, what's going on. feel more comfortable in that range.
So, I mean, the obvious question somebody would ask was, linking back to what Brian said, if you say, oh, I'm going to say comfortably that this patient, when I get them down to their, quote, baseline PEEP of 20, that is their normal physiology, and we should then extubate them on that. Someone is going to say, yeah, but if you extubate them, they're going to drop down to no PEEP because they're no longer on positive pressure. And how do you know how they're going to do with that? Mm-hmm. And then this is always a question of these people that you empirically putting on you know, more pressure because of their bodies. What are you going to do when they come off the ventilator? And then how do you trial them and assess their readiness? Because one person will say, I think they always have some PEEP. They auto-PEEP maybe. So they maybe have some of this naturally. And another person would say, well, no, normally they have probably no PEEP, but they're used to it. And in fact, if you image their chest or evaluate them otherwise, even on a normal day when they just came to the ICU to visit their friend and they walked in there, they do have atelectasis because they have a lot of weight on their chest and not a lot of pressure in the alveoli. And that's why these people have OSA and OHS and these baseline diseases that become exacerbated by something. But by that way of thinking, you should wean them like a normal person because they're going to end up with no positive
no PEEP
and extra pressure. Yeah. So if I want to know if they're going to do well, that's how we should test them. Where do you fall in this realm?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an important question. And I should say that, you know, to extubate on a PEEP of 20 seems scary, probably is scary. And probably in most cases is not 100% right. I think a lot of the physiology changes when these people go from supine, sedated OR and ICU patients to upright, walking around, negatively inspiring patients. When the ability to displace that chest wall off of the lungs is, you know, facilitated by their normal day-to-day life, they probably do walk around with some amount of atelectasis, and there is some still extrinsic component causing, you know, lack of complete recruitment. But by and large, their lungs are going to be open. They're going to be able to ventilate, able to oxygenate. It is a lot of what we subject them to being in the hospital, being in the ICU, that makes us need to alter how we look at their physiology. And if you can get them sat bolt upright, get them to be, you know, in a chair and get their mobility up, you probably don't need quite that degree of PEEP. And that is where the anthropometric BMI divided by 3 versus an individualized measurement of a transpleural pressure of 0. That's where you might get variability even within a single patient as their own internal control. If we measured these patients prone, upright, and supine, we'd probably get 3 totally different PEEPs, and that can't be accounted for in just this bedside heuristic of BMI divided by 3. Mm-hmm. And so that change in physiology comes at, you know, that's something that can't entirely be captured. And to your point, going from PEEP of 20 to PEEP of 0 and not changing the rest of the conditions, you're going to instantly de-recruit.
Yeah. I guess for my perspective, my bias, it would be, and I think a lot of people would fall here, it's somewhere in between is the answer. If someone, you know, their measured or estimated, you know, baseline PEEP is really high, you're talking in the 20s or 30s or something, then if you think they're getting better, and being dogmatic and saying they don't need to ever go below that, that's their baseline, I think that's a bit strong because this is not their baseline. They are a different person than they were when they were healthy a few weeks ago. They are less mobile unless you've had them jogging around the unit the whole time. And while you aspire for something else, it's probably going to be a while until they are spending as much time upright and moving as normal. They probably still have some lung disease, even if you have hopefully improved them. Some changes will be immediate when you extubate them. They're now inspiring with negative pressure. Maybe that helps them to recruit and some other things, but others are going to be more over time. So probably I would like to see them come down to a somewhat lower PEEP, but that is also not the same thing as saying they should end up on 5.
I think a lot of people, they're the ones who they'll extubate on 10 or something like that, not expecting them to go to 0 or 5, but also, you know, not leaving them on some crazy high number, even if they were being very astute and using that higher number to optimally recruit them during their vent course.
Yeah, I think that completely nails it. Just like 90% of what we do in critical care is it depends on the patient and it depends on the conditions. But in this case, I certainly think that that change in physiology when you're getting close to that, you know, extubation time period, ideally their lung disease is largely resolved. They're going to be more participatory in their own breathing, you know, respiratory mechanics, and we're going to be more upright and we're going to optimize our positioning, that getting somewhere less than that pure BMI divided by 3 is probably going to be exactly where they land and what they would need.
Brian, other question?
Yeah, I think for me, the take home message here is less about doing this calculation to determine how much PEEP I need, and more doing this calculation to determine how much PEEP I can tolerate, right? Because I think I can still look at a patient who's on maybe 8 or 5 of PEEP and, hey, they look good. They're oxygenating, they're ventilating well, right? But if they're not, then maybe I'm a little less afraid now of going up to a PEEP of 12, 18, 20, 25 in somebody who's morbidly obese, because I go, that's too high, right? Now I go, well, maybe it's not too high. Maybe for them, that's what they need. And they're showing me that by, you know, not doing well on the ventilator right now.
I think that's exactly right. And the times that I've found this to be most useful in my ICU practice are the times when someone is, you know, they're on a PEEP of 12 and everyone's nervous to go beyond that, but we're stuck on an FiO2 of 90% and their lung volumes look small on x-ray. And it stands to reason that based on their habitus and based on kind of our findings that they would be able to, you know, not only would they tolerate more PEEP, but they need it in this case. And in that patient and in that disease process, yes, feel empowered to push the limits of what we typically feel is comfortable. If you have someone whose BMI is 40, they're on a PEEP of 8 and an FiO2 of 30%, and they look great, there is no reason, of course, to rock the boat. But when you can't oxygenate that person, you're like, am I getting into trouble? Am I going to cause barotrauma? Or you're trying to get someone, you know, on less support to try and see if they can spontaneously breathe and see if you can get them closer to extubation readiness. Take into account what is their BMI, what is their body habitus, what might they need intrinsically, and see if that is a useful tool to you in that moment.
You know, it's like adjusting your sanity check, your kind of expectation for what's normal. You know, as comes to mind, it's like dosing furosemide. You know, you might have a kind of in your mind a normal dose, 20 or 40, you know, IV for like a normal person. But if you're smart, you realize that some things will dramatically change that. And you need to adjust your sense for what normal is so that you're not like, whoa, 80, that's a crazy high dose, because you see that their creatinine is 4 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard people say, oh, you multiply their creatinine by 20 or 40 or something like that, and that'll give you kind of a baseline dose. And the point is not that any of these numbers are perfect. It's that your sense for what is kind of in the range of normal may need to dramatically vary so that you eyeball a patient and you see their BMI is 40 and you say, I think it's probably going to be normal-ish for this person to be on 10 or 15 a PEEP. And then you go from there. I mean, who knows what they're actually on, but it helps you to catch. And then if you see them on 5, you say, wow, that they're actually doing quite well, even though, you know, again, not everyone's lungs are optimally recruited all the time. That guy may have walked into the unit with only half of his lungs full of air. People can tolerate that. It gives you kind of some more data that, because you think this one issue is fully managed or only partially managed or whatever.
That totally nails it. In the patient in front of you, how can I use their individual physiology in this particular case? What have I not considered? And when can I feel comfortable pushing the limits of what is our typically accepted normal and going, you know, up from there if that's what the patient seems to need? I have a colleague who loves to say, give the patient exactly what they need and no more. And I think that kind of summarizes it for a lot of things. Give the patient exactly the amount of PEEP that they need and no more. And if 8 is not there because their BMI is 40, feel empowered to challenge that physiology and making sure that, again, you're maintaining safe plateau pressures and driving pressures. Feel empowered to go up from there, and you will likely achieve better recruitment and better oxygenation in a lot of cases.
Yeah. And I guess that gets to one caveat I would try to offer as well, which is that treating this as sort of a ballpark idea also will help reinforce the lesson that any one exact number for PEEP titration, like a lot of things, is probably not going to be right just because of changes in physiology. I mean, you highlighted one of the big ones. They just change position. And that can probably have a big effect on this because it changes how much weight is on your chest. Mm-hmm. But when we have a method of coming by a number which seems rather precise, like a measurement or a formula, it's tempting to really stick onto it and be like, oh, we did the math. And this patient's right peak is, 14.1, and that's how it must stay forever. When a change as simple as them turning in bed or something else, you might need to adjust. So you can't try to give more precision to the number than it holds when you know that physiology is going to change all the time. And I would think that's true even no matter how good your number. If you have an esophageal balloon, unless you're measuring it 40 times per minute and you have like a continuous PEEP titration, that too is probably going to be a ballpark in most cases because it may be kind of older data. Never minding, is there a difference in pleural pressures depending on where you measure and other things. But Olivia, parting thoughts on this?
I've got more coming down the pike. Just to kind of give you a preview, Gabe Tharp has another data set from within the OR looking at these patients supine with a particular type of OR table that allows their abdomen to hang free. Oh. And take that out of the equation. And
what about prone patients? That's the
one. That's what I was just thinking. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or whole
pregnant patients.
Ballpark.
Yeah, there's a whole... Or, if I amputate someone's leg, their BMI is going to change, but not the weight on their chest. Maybe we should be weighing their chest or measuring the girth or something.
Measuring their abdominal circumference or something. Yeah. But I think my big take home from this, again, is things in critical care medicine are pushing toward individualization. And this is just one other tool that you can use to break free of dogma and try and do a better job of estimating what is going to work in this person in this case.
Well, I really love work like this because it is so practical in that way. It's one thing to say, oh, we used esophageal balloons or EIT or some device that most people don't have, and it gave us some useful data. And most people are going to read that and say, well, that's great. Like, I don't have that. Like, I got to move on here. Yeah. But something that's as simple as a quick bit of arithmetic, and if you can't divide by 3, then this might not be the field for you. that is really practical, with all the caveats described, but still, describing what the utility is and that it's trying to account for this thing that we know is a variable, but now it's much less of a wild card, and then going from there, that seems super useful. And like you said, people can get it really off with very obese patients. So if you even get, 50%, 30% closer to the right general ballpark, you're probably doing a lot better for that really big patient. You got them 5 a PEEP when they should be on 30.
Yeah. And this is becoming a, greater and greater fraction of the patients that we treat. And it's, this is probably not the exception. This is probably the rule in many cases, and something that we should be looking into and seeing how this might change our practice going forward.
Yeah. Well, maybe in 20 years when we're all on GLP-1s, this will be viewed as a podcast on neurosyphilis, a historical artifact. But. All right. Well, thank you, Olivia. We'll remind everyone this is just some general educational content, no specific advice for you. And we're not representing our institutions or even our author groups, just some of our own thoughts on this matter. We'll talk to you next time.